Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining me today. Thanks for being part of my day. It's my pleasure. You're going to be glad you hung out with us this hour because we got our good friend Joan Pride back on the show. Joan's a longtime member of our Brain Trust. Joan, you and I are coming up on a 9th anniversary. How about that?
Hi there, Jim. Boy, I can't believe that.
It's good to have you back. Yeah,
wow,
9 years.
Wow, it only feels like 10. Wow.
Only feels like 100, right?
Yeah, geez.
No, yeah, this the 1st of January.
Wow.
Pretty excited, huh?
That's amazing. And I'll be with Kiplinger 10 years in February.
I know. And yeah, that's the thing. I got you when you were so new, you didn't know to turn this job down, did you? This gig down, did you?
I know. And I've been paying for it ever since.
But not getting paid for it, right?
Well, that's the problem, yeah. Exactly.
Anyway, it's good to have you back. And we missed you
last week. Thank you. Missed you too.
Yeah. Joan, I'm especially glad you're here today because the first topic of discussion in the Kiplinger letter is all about currency.
Ugh.
And you being our currency expert and all.
Oh yeah. Boy, if I'm your currency expert, you're in trouble.
Things are looking up for the dollar, Joan. What's that all about?
Well, you know, the dollar's been in the doldrums lately, and I know some people will say, "Hey, wait a minute, it's good for me," because whenever the dollar is whatever way the dollar goes, there's winners and losers. But lately, the dollar has been falling against other currencies, or it had been falling against other currencies. It was even below the Canadian dollar, and I don't think in my lifetime we had ever seen that before.
I've never seen that before, no.
And it was below the euro and other currencies as well.
And folks, if you want to get an idea about that, go look at all the books you own, and you'll see that they'll have two prices on it. It'll have a U.S. price and a Canadian price.
Right.
And the Canadian price is always several dollars, $2 or $3 or $4 or $5 more than the U.S. price.
Right.
So if you're doing a book today, you might not be like that.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Things are as we say, but we say not too far up. That the dollar isn't going to explode in value, but we think things are going to turn around and get better.
Here's what I've learned about the dollar, Joan. I've been paying attention.
I'm glad you've learned something.
I've been paying attention to this a little bit more lately. Of course, the dollar, the U.S. dollar, has been the currency of choice for the world for a long time, hasn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, people have liked dollar-denominated goods and assets, stocks, our treasuries, that sort of thing, because it's always been people have always trusted, they've always believed in it, and they're still buying our treasuries.
Right.
But as the dollar weakens against other currencies, if I buy dollar-denominated goods or assets like stocks in dollars and the dollar weakens and I live in another country and it weakens against that currency, then what I have bought is now worth less.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
So, you know, let's say you could trade. I think this is pretty good analogy. Let's say you could trade in airline tickets. You know, we all know that when you buy an airline ticket, anybody who's traveled overseas, you know, when you buy an airline ticket, that airline ticket, when you go overseas to like Europe where the euro is, if the currency, if the U.S. dollar is weak against the euro, you're not going to have as much fun over there. It's going to cost you a lot more money, isn't it?
No, exactly. Yeah. No, the weak dollar is a real problem for U.S. tourists going overseas. Absolutely.
Right. Exactly. So if you do that kind of business, as the dollar drops, you know, if you're counting on the dollar, if you've invested in the dollar, then you've got some problems. So it's interesting. Now here's the other thing, Joan. The Fed is one of the groups who is responsible for maintaining the strength of the dollar.
Right.
But they're also getting pressure to lower interest rates on the dollar. right? Exactly. I mean to lower interest rates,
period, right.
Right, but when they do that, that lowers the yield on dollar securities, like the Fed funds.
Oh, okay.
See, and so people don't want foreign governments, foreign investors don't want to buy dollar denominated goods because the price is going down, because the interest rate's going down on the yield on our securities.
Okay.
So the Fed, you know, they're trying to save the economy by lowering interest rates, but they're hurting the dollar when they do that.
Ooh.
So they're on the horns of a dilemma, some horns of a dilemma here.
But now you'd agree that a lower dollar isn't all bad. There are some bright spots for a low dollar.
There's no question about it. It's already helped our surplus. Current account.
It's great for exporters.
For the current account. What is that? What it's called?
The current account deficit.
Yeah, current account deficit. Yeah. It's helped that. It's improved that. And anyway, it's a complicated thing, but you guys say that over time the dollar will never. I mean, it sounds like you think the dollar will never return to its prominence that it had at one time.
Well, we say it'll return to firmer territory in mid-2008, but I don't know that it's going to explode in value.
Well, you guys say that the global dominance will erode, the greenback's global dominance will erode.
Over the longer term, mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
Yeah. So I wonder what that'll mean for us, Joan. The good news, Joan, you've heard me say many times before that I think globalization is a good thing. I believe when goods cross borders, armies don't, as Frederick Bastiat taught us in the 19th century. I think trading with countries are good, but the more we trade with those countries, the more they become less third world countries, some of those countries like India and China.
You bet.
The more they become on par with us, with the United States, economically.
Well, yeah, you bring them into the fold and they're less likely to want to be enemies.
So I guess what I'm getting at is for most of the 20th century, we were worried about other people dominating us militarily or getting ahead of us militarily or maybe even in the space race. In the 21st century, our concern, and maybe concern is not the right word, but we have to think about other countries dominating and being ahead of us monetarily, economically. And that's what we're going to talk about some more of. We'll come back after these messages. 20 after the hour, I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride is our guest. We got a lot more to come. Stay with us. ...their interest rates, then we've got a disadvantage against other currencies if they're not lowering their interest rates.
That's right.
And when England and Canada's central banks lowered interest rates, that helped us out a little bit. And that happened before the Fed did what they did this week.
Yes. And the Fed this week lowered interest rates a quarter point.
Quarter point.
Now, you would think everybody would be happy about that, wouldn't they? Wouldn't you?
One would think.
But the stock market was kind of mad because it wasn't as much as they wanted.
It went down Tuesday, but then it went back up on Wednesday.
Well, it kind of went up and down and up and down
on
Wednesday.
So what kind of world is that, Joan?
I don't know.
What kind of world is that? I mean, and you know, why do we get so obsessed? Why is the news media, why is the media so obsessed with any kind of an entity that's schizophrenic?
Yeah,
and I don't know. It blows my mind. The reason I think the stock market did what it did was because they had already baked in a quarter point minimum, and they were hoping for a little lagniappe, as the Cajuns say. They were hoping for a little serendipity of another quarter point down over to a half.
Yeah.
They didn't get it.
Exactly.
So, but you know, Joan, the other thing that the Fed has to worry about is inflation.
Right, exactly.
If they lower interest rates, that encourages, that boosts inflation a little bit.
Yes.
And so, I wouldn't, I don't know that the Fed's doing a great job right now, Joan, but that's they got a tough job. They got the things that are real in the market, in the Main Street, real economy. They got these whiny crybabies on Wall Street. Right. Have you ever heard Wall Street be so whiny in your life?
Oh, that just amazed me. The Fed lowers rates and the market tanks. I don't get
they've
that
done
at
this.
All.
They've done that before, but I mean,
yes.
Here they are. They've made all these excessive and improper, imprudent investments in all the subprime securitization and all that. The laws of economics, you know, hauls them up short. And shows them what a mess they've made.
Right.
And then they start whining if the Fed doesn't bail them out with lower interest rates.
Exactly.
Joan, imagine me, small business owner, making a bad investment and going to my banker and saying, "Why won't you loan me any money? What do you mean? I deserve this."
Right.
"I didn't mean to do that. I didn't mean to make a mistake." I mean, what can you imagine? They'd call security if I did that.
Yes, they'd take you away.
I'm so sick of Wall Street. Joan, I've been using this analogy almost every day. The economy is a dog. It's a beautiful collie. And the body of the dog is Main Street, and the tail is Wall Street.
Yeah.
And Wall Street thinks it should wag the tail.
Oh,
I mean, wag the dog.
Wag the dog.
Yeah.
Very good.
And I don't think it should.
Well, I would think most people would agree with you.
Do you know how many companies are publicly traded? How many U.S. companies are publicly traded? It's about 15,000.
Okay, that doesn't.
Okay, I don't know whether it's 1,000 one way or the other. Somewhere around 15,000 or so. You know how many businesses there are in Main Street?
A heck of a lot more
in the United States. In the United States, counting all the small businesses.
Yeah.
About 28 million.
Gee.
15,000. Versus 28 million.
Yeah.
All right, let me tell you one other thing.
Okay.
Recently, surveys showed that more C-level managers, more top executives of U.S. companies, larger companies, were planning on hiring fewer people in 2008. A poll was just taken of small business owners that showed that they were planning to hire more people in 2008. Now, what's wrong with that picture, Joan?
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. I think the only way to get some sanity into reporting, true reporting about the economy, is to blend. And to what Kiplinger does, you guys do a good job of this, Joan, to blend the Main Street reality with the Wall Street hysteria.
Well, that's our job. We try to put it in perspective to show what it means to Main Street and what the importance is to Main Street.
And mine too.
Yes.
But Joan, we're just two people out here, you know, in the night trying to speak the truth. But you know, try to get some of that on any of the mainstream media. You're not getting a lot of that.
No, I don't see it.
They think Wall Street is the economy.
Right.
Or they act like it.
And I don't understand why that is.
Well, it's because those entities are so metrically designed with in increments, and you can measure that, and you can see things moving up and down. Small businesses don't do that. Main Street doesn't do that. We don't measure in half hours or you know, this hour the market's down or up or whatever. Stand by, Joan. I'm getting excited here, folks. I'll be right back with Joan Pride after these messages. 29 after.
He's the man Talkers Magazine says is one of the most important talk show hosts in America.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
He's Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with us today. Thanks for being part of my day. Visiting with our good friend Joan Pride, and she's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, as you know. By the way, my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. The first one is where you can find our show and all the other things we do, and the second one is our knowledge base, smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. Check them out. Use them to your advantage. No barrier to entry. If you can get there, we'll let you come in and hang out with us. Joan, let's move over and talk about the economy. You know, Joan, and this is off the letter just a little bit. If you listen to the so-called experts, either reading them or hearing them on the radio or television or whatever, the economists, some of them say our economy's in the tank and we're in a recession, we're going into a recession, it's going to be ugly. Then you listen to another guy and he says, or she says, you know what, we're doing okay. It's going to be a little bit of tough sledding, but we're not going into a recession.
My neck hurts.
Yeah, exactly. So it's whiplash, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Here's what I do think, though, Joan. I think we're headed into, I believe this, and I said this week a couple of three times, even said it on television, that we will, if we have a recession, if we look back and we actually did have a recession, we will be out of it before we knew we actually had one.
And that's historically been true.
It has been lately. It has been true lately. Mm-hmm. Like the last couple we've had. Exactly. But here's something I think is going to be interesting, Joan. I don't think I've ever seen a recession where employment was still growing.
Okay.
And I think that's where this, if we have a downturn, I think this is where it'll be kind of a weird type of recession, because we're still creating jobs out there.
You have to wonder. I realize that there's a textbook definition of what a recession is, but, you kind of wonder if maybe we have to change it, and maybe this isn't labeled a recession.
Maybe we need to quit saying the word.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to quit even identifying it as that, because, I mean, everything goes up and goes down.
Right. It's become such a loaded word.
Yeah. And so it's exactly, it's such a loaded word that it's, people shy away from it when I held off a long time before I uttered the word myself here on the show.
Right.
But here's the thing. Even if we have what is technically called one, so what?
Right, exactly. That's my point.
So yes. What?
Yes.
And I'll tell you something else, Joan. And Alan Greenspan had an article in the Journal yesterday where he was kind of covering his backside over his contribution to the current financial mess we got ourselves. Yeah, he was kind of covering his own backside on that. But he did point something out that he said something that I've been saying on this show for years, Joan, and that is that what happened recently in the financial markets has a history all the way back to tulipomania.
Oh, that's right.
In the 16th century.
Speculation.
He used the exact terms that I've been using, the South Sea Bubble, the Mississippi Scheme.
No kidding, he did?
Yeah, exactly. Wow. He's been listening to my show, and obviously. And so these are all things that are chronicled in The Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds, that book that Charles McKay wrote. But the thing is that, Joan, as long as we have people, as long as fear and greed dominate a large part of the decisions that are being made, we're going to have these peaks and valleys.
Yeah.
So what do you think? Let's just say, okay, this is, we're going, things are going to slow down. So what?
Call it a slowdown. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right. Now, Joan, the White House came out with a mortgage plan this year, this week,
yes.
I should say,
last
week.
It did.
And what do we know about it?
Well, one of the things that the administration tried to do was to tell the banks to come up with a plan that would freeze interest rates to keep people from having to pay higher payments and possibly lose their homes.
This was the government injecting itself into existing contracts, right?
And now, this wasn't passing a new law. This was the government jawboning.
Yeah.
Banks to do this and mortgage lenders to do this. So yes, mm-hmm. The government was injecting itself into the free marketplace
and trying to influence the changes in the condition of contracts, in the facts of contracts.
Right, exactly.
Which I don't like anything about this, Joan. I don't like anything, not one thing about this. We're going to talk about this just a little bit more and some other important economic issues when we come back after these messages. 20 Till, Joan Pride is our guest. I'm Jim Blassingame. I'm your host. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. Joan Pryder is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And right now is the time when I usually like to tell you about the Kiplinger website, which is a good one, and one that I encourage you to check out for some outstanding financial information and news about what's going on in the world, Kiplinger.com. But if you want to know more about, if you want to know a little bit, you want to get into some of the stuff the heavy stuff that they do, the research that they do, the in-depth reporting that Kiplinger does, you need to be a subscriber. And they do charge a little bit for that. It's not very much. It's very, very good value. And that, but that gets you any of their publications. That gets you the Kiplinger letter, which is the weekly letter Joan and I work off of. They got three biweekly letters, Joan. You got the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter. Those are every other week.
Right.
The Kiplinger letter, folks, has been around since 23. That's as in 1923. And then they've got a magazine that Joan's going to tell you about.
That's right. It's Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And that comes out monthly. You can find that in newsstands, bookstores. What about the phone number, Joan?
The phone number is 800-544-0155.
And when you call them, tell them you want the Jim Blassingame 30-day free trial. And after they hang up, dial them back. Don't mention my name the second time. But do ask for the free trial. They'll give it to you. Just kidding, folks. They'll give it to you. Joan, we're talking about the economy and the mortgage, the subprime thing. Joan, I don't know what to believe. Some people say that the subprime problem, the default and the foreclosure thing is going to be catastrophic. And some people say it's a very small percentage of the overall outstanding mortgages. And all of them obviously are not going to go into default and foreclose. Is the financial industry making a bigger deal out of this than it really is?
Or is the media making a bigger deal out of this than it already is? I don't know.
Yeah. You know, Joan, I think that the government ought to stay out of this. I think that the servicers, the mortgage holders and servicers, should stay in touch with the mortgagees, the property owners, and if they come up with a plan to help these people work out of it. If you remember, Joan, 2 months ago, 3 months ago, I said they will work something out and they won't cause these people to go into foreclosure if there's any way possible. Remember me saying that?
Yes.
But it's got to be between the stakeholders in the contracts.
Right.
The government
can't be government dictated.
I hate that.
Yeah, I can tell.
I can't say, well, Joan, we have nothing in this country, in the United States, if we can't rely on our contracts.
Right.
We have nothing. Right. If the government can come in willy-nilly, and even jawboning, Joan, Now, here's what the government could do, Joan. They could say, okay, there are two or three bank regulations that have been established that make it harder for mortgage servicers to make adjustments to allow these people to reset their mortgage and to renegotiate. So we're going to ease up on those regulations a little bit for a period of time. Now, I think that would be a good idea.
Yeah, that makes sense.
If there's some regulatory constraint to working this thing out, you know, once we've already got the problem, let's don't make it worse. I get that. But the jawboning are – I'll tell you something else, Joan, this that I'm worried about. Congress is working on – some new mortgage laws that's going to put some extra restrictions on the mortgage industry. I think that's going to be a mistake too.
Yeah, but you can see where that's going to happen, though.
It's going to be the Sarbanes-Oxley for mortgage companies, Joan.
Right, exactly.
Which is, you know, Sarbanes-Oxley has been a disaster.
It's been very problematic, sure.
For corporate America and for Wall Street. Of course, you know me, I'm always sticking up for Wall Street.
Right.
Joan, what are we getting out of OPEC? Are they helping us out any?
No, and in a word, they are not. We're saying in our Kiplinger turn of phrase that OPEC isn't handing out any holiday presents to oil consumers. That, you know, crude prices have been coming down a little bit, but they're not going to come down a whole lot. They're not going to open the spigot and let a lot more oil flow.
Yeah, they're not helping us out with the production of it. Seems like we got some bad news this week, Joan, a little bit, that there was actually less less oil in the pipeline than we thought there was, in the inventory, so to speak, than we thought there was.
Right. It's funny, though, because we say don't expect crude to fall below $80 a barrel. At this point, I'd love
to see
$80 a barrel.
We'd love $80 a barrel, wouldn't
we? Yeah.
Well, Joan, with the increased demand by the world now for crude, and with these foreign countries, these producers, the OPEC members, really liking these new higher prices for oil, they can control the price by controlling the volume, can't they?
Oh, no question about it. They always have. They didn't used to be as disciplined about making sure they stuck with their quotas.
Yeah, yeah.
And Joan, I think partly a lot of times, you know, the price was too low for a lot of these producers to make money unless they did flood the market with more oil, even though that's a little counterintuitive. But now that the price is higher, then they can make more even though they're selling less.
Folks, as you're doing your 08 budget, I'd recommend that you plan on $3 a gallon for your budget.
Yeah,
I wouldn't fool myself. If it works out being less than that, happy, you know, Merry Christmas, happy birthday.
Because world demand is only going to go up, as you point out.
That's right. Yeah. Hey, Joan, this is hurting the car manufacturers too, isn't it, the high gas?
I'm afraid so. We're saying that our forecast for car sales is going down to 15.5 million, which doesn't sound bad, but it's the lowest in 10 years.
Yeah, and the U.S. companies, Chrysler, Ford, GM, those are the ones that are going to be hit the worst, obviously, because they don't have as many subcompacts as some of the other Japanese car companies have. Tintail, right back. More to come right after these messages with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I'm Jim Blassingame. I'm senior editor around here, too.
Do it or die now. Stand your ground. Don't let
We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, we're over on page 3 talking about the election. You know, Joan, if you remember when I did my predictions for 07 last year,
yeah,
I predicted that the leader of the Republicans would be in the polls would be a guy who hadn't even announced at that time, which was Mitt Romney, and that the leader of the Democrats would not be Hillary Clinton. Now, I'm going to be doing my predictions for 08. I'm going to be reconciling and tallying up my 07 predictions
right
in the next week or so. It'll be published right after Christmas. But right now, I'm looking pretty good on those two fronts, notwithstanding Mr. Huckabee.
Well, yeah, no, the whole political situation, at least for a journalist like myself, has just been wonderful. It's very topsy-turvy right now.
Well, Mr. Huckabee is really got a bullet right now, doesn't he?
He sure, yeah, absolutely, he sure has one.
And Romney,
I think he's the beneficiary of the disappointment over Senator Thompson, because I think conservatives had wanted Senator Thompson to be their guy, and for whatever reason, that just hasn't worked out. And now they're
Why did he even bother if he wasn't going to put more energy into this?
That's the big question.
Did he think he was going to be? Did he think he was going to be swept in?
Yes.
And anointed?
Yes. That's my theory.
It's unbelievable.
Right. Well, and the rap on former Senator Thompson is that he doesn't work as hard as others might. And, you know, you've got other campaigners, you know, like them or dislike them, you know, folks like Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Rudy Giuliani, and Mitt Romney. They are working their rear.
Well, Huckabee is, too.
And Huckabee is, too.
Yeah, and it's paying off for Huckabee. Now, what's interesting about Huckabee is if we're looking at ROI, Joan, dollars, you know, invested per numbers in the polls, Huckabee may have the most efficient campaign in the world in the history of politics.
But what I find interesting about watching him is conventional wisdom would say that he cannot possibly succeed because he doesn't have what they call the ground troops or the organizational infrastructure.
Yeah.
So if he were to continue to succeed, that would kind of turn all of this political thinking on its head.
Well, I've got two predictions I'm going to make right now.
Ooh. Okay, wait. Let your listeners get their pens out.
There you go.
Not pencils,
Huckabee
pens.
Will be on the Republican ticket in 08.
Oh, interesting way of phrasing
that. He will be on the ticket.
Interesting.
I don't know where. I'm not going to predict where, but he'll be on the ticket in 08. And here's my Democrat prediction.
Uh-oh.
I believe that Oprah will help Obama probably if Obama wins and Hillary doesn't become the nominee, and Obama does, I think Oprah will help him do that. But I think she will not be a help to him in the general election campaign.
And why do you say that? I'm not disagreeing. I'm just curious.
Yeah. I just think that in among Democrats, she will be a big help to him.
Yeah.
Once it gets in the general population, I mean into the general election, I don't think most Americans will want Oprah to be a kingmaker. I think they won't like the idea of anybody. Like it could be Charlton Heston. It doesn't matter who it is. They won't like the idea that one person could have that much influence. I think they'll react to that.
Well, and if the Obama organization is smart, they might ask her to cool it.
Bingo.
During the general election,
they've been calling recently, and I've been giving them this advice. You know me; I'm always able. You know, I'm always glad to help out anybody. You know,
it doesn't matter who.
It's for the good of the country.
Right.
Did you think that Romney's religious speech was effective?
I'm not sure that it was. I don't know because
he had to do it.
Leave
though,
a lot of unanswered. Oh, he had to do it.
Yeah.
But I think he waited a bit too long to do it, and I'm not sure he answered a lot of the questions that people wanted answered.
There are questions that he didn't get into that will have to be answered.
Right.
And I'm not so sure it was a good idea for him to bring them up, but I do think that it's not over.
I think you're right.
Yeah. Right. Joan, a couple of quick notes. The IRS mileage rate is going up 2%.
Two cents to 50 and a half cents in 2008. And that's the standard business mileage rate. If you're going to, you can use that instead of having to keep all those receipts for your business driving.
What about postage?
Well, postage.
It's going up a little bit.
I don't know if this is good news or bad news. Postage is going up, but the point we're making is that we're going to have an era of more predictable pricing.
What does that mean?
Well, it means that raises will be announced annually. Now, okay, you don't want an annual raise, but at least they're going to be based on inflation, and they're just not going to be herky-jerky all over the place.
That makes me feel so much better, Joan.
I feel you'd be happy.
It really warms my cockles to know the post office is going to be giving me such good information. So transparent. Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, Jim.
To you and yours.
Thank you. You too.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editor. She'll be back, I promise. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.